Hello, this is Paula with the Vermilion County News on Thursday, March 5th, 2020. We'll start with a story that's titled It's Showtime, Vendors to Fill Palmer Arena for AmBucks Expo. And this is written by a Christopher Moricle in Danville. And there is a picture of a crowd fills David S. Palmer Arena in Danville during the 2019 AmBucks Home and Living Expo. This year's event will be Saturday and Sunday at the arena. After instituting a lot of changes last year, Home and Living Expo coordinator Cindy Blacker said AmBucks is continuing on with those successes. Be there, but there is a little being changed. It started out as a lot about home improvement, Blacker said, so I'm trying to get more living. Not everyone is going to fix their house this year. AmBucks Annual Home and Living Expo is set for 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Saturday and 11 to 4 p.m. on Sunday at David S. Palmer Arena at 100 West Main Street. Admission is free to anyone who wants to talk to vendors or enjoy the scheduled entertainment. With nearly 70 vendors registered for booth space, there will be something for everyone, whether it's home improvement help or other areas of life. Educational services, healthcare organizations, and financial institutions will all be on hand to explain ways their group can help. And for those with housework to be done, several contractors will be available to discuss construction options. Food vendors will be on site with the Love and Cup food truck outside and will host Papa Murphy's, Girl Scouts selling cookies, the Danville Advocates selling popcorn, and a new business, Cobblers and Cream, ready to satisfy taste buds. Mormon's Home Improvement is sponsoring a punch card program in which participants can take the card to different vendors to get a hole punched, then enter into a drawing. There will be multiple winners, Blacker said, but the big prize is $500. On stage Saturday will be Elena May Warden at 10:30 a.m., ATA Martial Arts at 11 a.m., Brittany Kane at 1:30 p.m., and the Northridge Middle School Redcoats at 2 p.m. ATA will host a fundraiser in which a board will be broken for a dollar collected. Sunday will be the Brittany Kane at 11:30 a.m., Casey Marion at 12:30 p.m., Sweet Adeline's at 1 p.m., The Filthy Janes at 1:30, and Kimberly Jo Montgomery at 3 p.m. Shannon Schroeder will give an essential oils presentation at 2:30. Near the stage also will be a Kids Corner, which will see appearances by the Easter Bunny at 1:30 p.m. on Sunday. OSF will sponsor games, and the Danville Public Library will host craft projects. The Home and Living Expo has been a fundraiser for AmBucks since the 1950s, Blacker said. Funds from the expo go to the organization's projects such as Amtrak's, Challenger League Baseball, Christmas parties, and others. For information on the Home and Living Expo or on how to become a member of the AmBucks, visit www.danvilleambucks.com. Next story is titled Special Fund Helps Canine with Cancer. And this is written by Mary Wyckoff in Fithian. And there's a picture of Jasmine Loves Her Owner, Melissa Custer of Fithian, and everyone else. The dog is undergoing treatment for lymphoma and is being helped by the Magic Bullet Fund. Jasmine Custer will enjoy plenty of presents, hugs, and smiles when she hits her 11th birthday on March 22nd. However, for the first time, there will be no cake for the American Staffordshire Terrier as she battles cancer. We're trying to keep away from sugar and carbs, owner Melissa Custer of Fithian said. Jasmine was diagnosed with lymphoma on January 6th and is undergoing several weeks of chemotherapy at the University of Illinois Veterinary Hospital. She's doing really good, Custer said. The dog has lost some hair on her tail and is on anti-nausea medicine. When Jasmine was diagnosed, the veterinarian told Custer that she could let the pet go or fight the illness. I went back and forth on it, she recalled. Finally, she decided to pursue oncology for her pet, who has been in the household since she was a puppy. Knowing the cost of cancer treatment can be formidable. Custer was happy to find help through the Magic Bullet Fund, based in New York. The fund was founded in 2005 by Lori Kaplan, whose Siberian Husky Bullet had cancer. She wanted to help others with limited financial resources who were helping their best friends fight cancer. She also published a book, Help Your Dog Fight Cancer. This year, the organization decided to help cats with cancer as well. One cat is going through the intake process. Kaplan said in the phone interview that 711 dogs have been helped since the fund started. Of those, 9 were from Illinois, and Custer's pet is the first from Vermilion County. An owner can apply for help but needs to meet 2 criteria. The person must have financial need and the dog or cat must have a good prognosis. In Custer's case, she has a good chance of a long-term survival with treatment. Once a pet is accepted by Magic Bullet Fund, the organization launches a fundraising campaign and makes a donation to kickstart the campaign. Custer's goal is to raise $2,000 for Jasmine, with more than $800 raised so far. Each owner has 30 days to raise funds, and Custer's deadline is March 10th. Kaplan explained that, in her experience, donations taper off after a month, and that's why a 30-day deadline is set. Custer is expected to raise $2,000 all by herself, although she is asked to make an effort to engage friends and family. The Magic Bullet Fund has 30 volunteers across the country who help screen and promote the pets. Also, there are sponsors on an email list who like to know when a pet is added. They make donations in general or to a specific breed. Kaplan said she and the owners are always working behind the scenes to get discounts from veterinarians or some type of help to lower the cost of the medications. Also, any donations made to Jasmine's fund will go directly to the veterinarian at the time of each treatment. Even if Jasmine's fund doesn't hit $2,000, Kaplan says we're going to get Jasmine through it one way or the other. Like a puppy. Custer said Jasmine will go through 25 visits. For now, she's going weekly. In about 3 weeks, she will have treatment every other week. Jasmine is tired after each treatment, but after a couple of days, she's back to herself and acts like a puppy again. Custer cooks all of her meals instead of buying food. Everything is natural now. She loves it, Custer said. She eats vegetables I would never eat. She cooks skinless, boneless chicken breasts and thighs for beef with vegetables, including carrots, broccoli, kale, and sweet potatoes. Custer makes it ahead and freezes portions of it. Jasmine loves people. The more attention she gets, the happier she is, Custer said. She's a baby. She thinks she's a lap dog. She enjoys playing with her squeaky toys, including Lamb Chop, a monkey, and an Olaf. She carries around a blanket that people have prayed over. Although she's nervous going to the U of I, Jasmine likes the workers there. Custer said, I couldn't ask for a better oncology team. They've been amazing with her. Custer also described Kaplan as an amazing person and praised the Magic Bullet team and its efforts. As for Jasmine's prognosis, Custer said she did a lot of research and found dogs receiving treatment for lymphoma live 3 to 4 years longer than they would have without treatment. If she does reach the goal, she said, we won't be able to finish treatment. We're hoping we're going to reach the goal or close to it. She wants Custer to enjoy a few more birthday parties. Okay, the next story is man found guilty of aggravated battery, and this is just written by a staff reporter in Danville. A Vermilion County jury found Tuesday a Hoopson man guilty of aggravated battery with a deadly weapon. Gary Johnson's Class 3 felony is punishable from probation to up to 5 years in prison, according to a press release issued Wednesday by Vermilion County State's Attorney Jacqueline M. Lacey. On May 7, 2018, Johnson's upstairs neighbor went downstairs to borrow a cup of sugar and check on Johnson's handicapped brother. Initially, when Johnson's brother let her into the house, Johnson was passed out drunk in a chair in the living room, according to the release. Shortly after, Johnson awoke and knocked the cup of sugar from her hands. When the victim turned around to confront the defendant, he had dropped his pants, exposing his penis, and was threatening to sexually assault her. Lacey said. As the victim turned, the defendant slashed her ear and shoulder with a pair of scissors. Hoopston police arrived and found the victim bleeding from her wounds. They found the defendant passed out in the same living room chair with scissors tucked between his right leg and the arm of the chair, according to the release. Aggravated battery with a deadly weapon is a Class 3 felony punishable from probation to up to 5 years in prison. Johnson will be sentenced on April 9th by Judge Nancy Fahey. Okay, now we'll run through the obituaries. Ricky Anthony Fayard, Sr., 62, of Bismarck, passed away at his home February 29th, 2020. A celebration of Ricky's life will be from 3 to 6 p.m. Saturday, March 7th, at the Potomac Community Building, with a service to begin at 3:30 p.m. Military honors will follow the service conducted by Potomac American Legion. Cremation rites have been accorded. Memorials may be made to the American Cancer Society. Karen Louise Astell, 75, of Covington, Indiana, passed away at 2:29 p.m. Monday, March 2nd, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. A celebration of Karen's life will be at 2 p.m. EST time Thursday, March 5th, at Sunset Funeral Home and Cremation Center in Covington at 420 3rd Street, with Pastor Joe Humrichius officiating. Visitation will be from 1 to 2 p.m. EST time prior to the service. She will be laid to rest at Mount Hope Cemetery in Covington. Georgia Jimson Seward transitioned this life to her heavenly home on Thursday, February 27th. A homecoming celebration will commence at noon on March 6th at New Life Church of Faith at 1419 North Bowman Avenue in Danville. Visitation will begin at 11 a.m. until the time of the service. Officiating Thomas W. Miller. Interment will follow after services at Spring Hill Cemetery. A public viewing will be from 1 to 5 p.m. Thursday, March 5th at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Donald G. Brooks, 90, of Danville, passed away at 8:19 a.m. Tuesday, March 3rd at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Graveside services will be at 11:45 a.m. Saturday, March 7th at Sunset Memorial Park, with Pastor Ramey Gordon officiating. Wesley Wes Archer Glover, 79, of Milford, passed away Monday, March 2nd at Heritage Health in Hoopston. Abiding by his wishes, there will be no visitation or funeral. He will be cremated. Interment will be in Maple Grove Cemetery in Milford at a future time. Memorials may be made to the Ark of Iroquois County. Lauren A. Fuzz Lewis, 77, passed away Monday, March 2nd, 2020, at his home. A graveside funeral service will be conducted at 11 a.m. EST time Friday in Pinewood Memorial Park. The family will receive friends from 6 to 8 p.m. Thursday at Wilkerson Funeral Home in Greenville. In lieu of flowers, memorials may be made to the American Lung Association, 1200 Hosford Street, Suite 101, Hudson, Wisconsin, 54016-9316. Memo, COPD Research. Juanita Orrington, 90, of Danville, died at 11:13 p.m. Thursday, February 27th, at her home. Funeral services will be at noon on Saturday at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Pastor Thomas W. Miller will officiate. Burial will be in Danville Cemetery at 11 a.m. Monday. Visitation will be at 11 a.m. Saturday at the funeral home. James M. Porter, 69, of Danville, died at 2:14 p.m. Sunday, March 1st, at OSF Sacred Heart Medical Center in Danville. Funeral services for the Army veteran will be at 12:30 p.m. Friday at VA Protestant Chapel at 1900 East Main Street in Danville. The VA chaplain will officiate. Burial with military rites will be at 1 p.m. Friday in Danville National Cemetery in Danville. Visitation will be from 11 to 12:30 p.m. Friday at VA Protestant Chapel. Rortvedt Funeral Services in Tilton is in charge of the arrangements. Peggy Rose, 84, of Williamsport, Indiana, formerly of Armstrong, died at 8:55 a.m. Tuesday, March 3rd at Franciscan Health in Lafayette, Indiana. Funeral arrangements were incomplete at Blurton Funeral Home at 400 North Vermilion Street in Potomac. And Gary D. Withers, 68, of Danville, died at 2:50 a.m. Wednesday, March 4th, at Grandview Manor Nursing Home in Danville. Arrangements were incomplete at Leek & Sons Funeral Home at 304 East William Street in Danville. Okay, the next story is titled Hoopston Could Help Cemetery, and this is written by Carol Hicks in Hoopston. City Council members voted 7-1 Tuesday to bring Floral Hill Cemetery into the digital world to preserve and back up the cemetery records on the city's website. After a lengthy discussion about whether to save the surplus cemetery funds for a rainy day or use it for a project that will benefit the city and cemetery, the council decided it was the right time to update. Alderman Chad Yaden said the cemetery records go back to the beginning of Floral Hill, but are in 29 books, mostly journals. Some of the records are on the computer. This year, he said, we have a surplus. When asking the council to help him make the decision, he added, we may not have another surplus for another 20 years to update. Alderman Bill McKelleny asked, do we want to wait until records get destroyed in a flood? He said, Yaden wants to be proactive and bring the antique system to up to date to protect the cemetery's records for future generations. The council voted to spend up to $25,000 for a website for Floral Hill Cemetery records, making the records available for family members of those buried at the cemetery. It also would show people the lots available, lots owned, ones transferred, and can be used as a research tool for genealogists searching in for ancestors. Alderman Bill Goodwine voted no. In other council business, Alderman Lordine Florick said there are not enough applications for lifeguards at the pool so far this year. It's not enough applicants, she said. We will not open the pool this year. She added that it will take 4 weeks to get the pool ready, and if the applications haven't increased by then, the decision to open the pool or not will be made by May 1st. Alderman Jeff Wise asked if lifeguard training is done in Hoopston or out of town. Training was done out of town. He suggested getting the training done in Hoopston might help bring in more applicants. Alderman Carl Ankenbrand said the Hoopston Police Department has two surplus vehicles, a 2005 and a 2007, both high-mileage vehicles with some mechanical problems. They will be sold as is. Bids will be opened at 10 a.m. on April 3rd. The cemetery is placing a 1996 green dump truck up for bids. Bids will be opened at 10 a.m. Friday, April 3rd. Three properties were discussed that have burned and not been demolished in accordance with ordinances. All three are beyond repair, two of which burned several years ago. The Dyer Mansion on East Honeywell is in bankruptcy, which prevents the city from tearing it down. The fire marshal is waiting to hear from the ATF about BZZ's bar and if it was arson, and the third party on the corner property on the corner of West Maple Street and First Avenue, the owner would need to work with the city to remove debris. The Fireman's Hospitality Early Bird Drawing will be 11 to 2 p.m. on March 7th. The Fireman's Bash will be from 4 to 8 p.m. May 2nd, followed by the Fireman's Ball at 8 p.m. until midnight. Members of the Hoopston Fire Department and Scott Keller Halls, Danville Correctional Officer, will host a Special Olympics Polar Plunge Street Corner fundraiser from 8 to 10 a.m. on March 14th. The fundraiser will be on the corners of Illinois Routes 1 and 9, Market and Main Streets, and Market and Penn Streets. The Ira Owen Krieger American Legion Post 384 Auxiliary will host its annual Poppy Day from 8 to noon on May 16th on the corners of Routes 1 and 9, Market and Main Streets, and Market and Penn Streets. Alderman learned the TV and electronics collection will be from 10 to 3 p.m. March 21st at the Grant Township Garage at 1101 South 7th Street, south of the high school softball field. Charge per television is $10, computer monitors $20, $10 computer monitor, $20 for TVs through 24 inch, $30 for TVs over 24 inches, and $50 for projection TVs and all wooden console models. Computer, keyboards, and components can be disposed of for free. The Central Illinois Land Bank Authority has a new executive director, Mike Davis. Davis would like to partner with Hoopston in order to find more grants to tear down dilapidated homes. Hoopston has about $30,000 left in its budget to demolish houses, according to Mayor Bill Krusenberry. By partnering with the land bank, Hoopston could demolish 4 to 6 houses this year instead of 2 or 3. Krusenberry will meet with Davis and Bill Nichols to discuss the partnership and bring information back to the next city council meeting. Hoopston has 18 properties and 2 commercial buildings to be demolished. Krusenberry said the new owner of the Schumacher building would like to raise cannabis in part of the building, but wanted to see if the city would allow it if it were to apply for a license. The council did not approve the use of the building for cannabis. They would be interested in other development for the building, however. The city's contract with Teasdale Foods regarding cleaning the wastewater lagoons was due. The new contract was forwarded to Chicago by plant manager Mel Lawler. Teasdale will pay a higher fee beginning next month, according to Krusenberry. Krusenberry reminded the city that letters will be sent out seeking donations for the fireworks again this year to help Carl Hospital with the costs of the fireworks. Krusenberry also reminded everyone to fill out the census forms when they come out. The census count for the city helps bring additional taxes into the city and is important to the city when obtaining state and federal grants. The next Hoopston Council City Council meeting will begin at 7 p.m. on March 17th in the City Hall. Next story is titled, Looking for Hand Sanitizer? Good luck finding it. And this is written by Joseph Pisani at the Associated Press in New York. The hand sanitizers on Amazon were overpriced. A Walmart this weekend was completely sold out. Only on his third try was Ken Smith able to find the clear gel at a Walgreens where 3 bottles of Purell were left. He bought 2. I didn't want to hoard, says Smith, a retired biomedical technician in Wichita Falls, Texas. Fear of the coronavirus has led people to stock up on the germ-killing gel, leaving store shelves empty and online retailers with skyrocket prices set by those trying to profit on the rush. More is on the way, although it's not clear how long it will take retailers to restock. Sales of hand sanitizers in the United States were up 73% in the 4 weeks ending February 22nd, compared to the same period a year ago, according to market research firm Nielsen. The alcohol-based gunk is convenient, but hand sanitizer isn't the best way to clean your hands. For that, soap and water still reigns supreme, according to the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The agency recommends first washing hands with warm or cold water and then lathering soap for 20 seconds to get it on the backs of the hands, between fingers and under fingernails before rinsing off. If you're not near a sink, hand sanitizer will do, but keep in mind that it doesn't kill all germs, the health agency says. Read the label and make sure that you're using one that has at least 60% alcohol. After applying it, rub it all over your hands until they're dry. Another tip, don't touch your face, since health officials say viruses could enter your body from your eyes, mouth, or nose. Hospitals are more concerned about a shortage of face masks, which people have also been snatching up despite pleas from health officials. Patients and treatment rooms in hospitals always have a sink with soap to wash hands, since Nancy Foster, the American Hospital Association's head of quality and patient safety. But there are no good alternatives to masks for nurses and doctors. Malls and sports arenas are adding more hand sanitizer stations, and some workplaces have said they are stocking up too. Purell, the best-selling hand sanitizer, is pumping up production. Walmart and other stores say they are talking to suppliers to stock up bare shelves, but didn't say how long That would take. Kroger, which runs nearly 2,800 supermarkets across the country, is limiting the amount of hand sanitizers shoppers can buy to up to five. Purell says it has been seeing higher demand from healthcare facilities in addition to stores. It is adding more shifts and having employees work overtime at the two Ohio facilities where most Purell is made, says Samantha Williams, a spokesperson for its parent company, Gojo Industries. Others are trying to keep up too. Copperol Cool, a brand of hand sanitizer in Brazil, says it sold 1 million bottles last month, up from 200,000 in February of 2019. The company that makes the brand says it's adding another shift at its factory in Piracaba, Brazil, and it is considering exporting it for the first time after being approached by companies in China, South Korea, and Thailand. In the U.S., Bath and Body Works, which sells hand sanitizer with scents like vanilla rose and pineapple colada, says it's been able to keep bottles in stock at its 1,700 stores. An executive for Bath and Body Works owner L. Brands said last week that hand sanitizers made up 5% of its total business and that it's growing at a very high rate. Walmart has seen higher demand for cleaning supplies and other items, similar to when shoppers start preparing for a hurricane. The world's largest retail says it is working with suppliers to stock up again on those items, including hand sanitizer. At a Costco in Los Angeles on Tuesday, hand sanitizer was gone and shoppers clogged the back of the cavernous store where workers were wheeling out pallet after pallet of bottled water. "Don't believe the hype," one worker shouted. Okay, the teacher of the week this week is Saturday was a special day for Westfield Junior High 7th grade history teacher BJ Witzman. His Not only was February 29th Leap Day his 40th birthday, it was his wife's as well. The parents of three boys were born in the same hospital in 1980. Our teacher of the week, though, stands out beyond his uncommon birthday. One favorite lesson to teach is my Fake Tweets from Historical Figures project. Students are allowed to choose six different people from history, and they use a computer program to make fake tweets that are accurate to the time of the person they selected was alive. This allows students to have fun and be creative at the same time. I find my work important because each day I get the privilege of inspiring my students to work hard, to have a good character, and to always follow their dreams. I'm proud to be a positive role model for my students and feel it is important to set a good example for all who are in a part of my classroom. I became a teacher because I have always known that I love working with kids. When I started to really think about what I wanted to do professionally, teaching was at the top of the list. Principal Jared Ellison said Mr. Whitman makes learning fun. Step into his classroom, he's just a big kid. The classroom is one that is inviting and fun. He makes history fun. He utilizes technology to stay current and to get students interested in history. He is someone who you would want your child to have as a teacher. The only drawback I can see in him is that he's not a Cubs fan. When I was a kid, my favorite teacher was Carol Marshall. She was my 4th grade teacher at Douglas Elementary School in Danville. She cared about her students and had a big heart. My favorite subject has always been social studies, which I'm fortunate to teach. If I weren't a teacher, I would either play first base or be a catcher for the St. Louis Cardinals. But since that could never pan out, I can honestly say this is the only profession that I have known, and I couldn't think of a better career choice for myself. We celebrate Leap Day jointly with our families and had a very low-key evening eating at La Potosina and having cake and ice cream at my parents' house. So he only has a birthday every 4 years. Anyway, that'll be it for today, Thursday, March 5th, 2020. Hopefully it's supposed to be nicer this week, get a little up into the 50s, so hopefully we'll warm up here. Anyway, I hope you all have a good week and see you again next week. Take care.